This is the Mind Your Business podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Mind Your Business podcast. My name is Matt Williams. I run an accountancy business in Oxford and I'm joined, as always, by the magnificent Alan Clark, fresh from a business expo. So I imagine your feet are a bit tired this evening, are they, Alan?
Oh, I tell you, I have not walked so far in a long time or talked so much in a long time. So yes, my voice is hoarse. I reckon I'll have 30 minutes left though for this podcast, but it's brilliant to get into. It was in a big 6 week stadium in Worcester, big stadium filled with entrepreneurs having wonderful conversations. So it's brilliant just to get that energy back in play, actually. So yeah, that's what I've been doing today.
Amazing. And you were banging the drum for the podcast, which we love. So
I was.
So there you go. Right. What? This is episode 38, Alan. We were just saying we're going to hit 40 before Christmas, which is just crazy. And I at some point, maybe when we get to like 300 or so podcasts, I'll stop saying how amazed I am that we're still here and still doing podcasts. But it still feels like just yesterday that we said, why don't we start a podcast? And look at where we've got to now. So, as ever, as always, what are we talking about today, Alan?
So we're going to talk about strategy, right? We are going to talk about strategy. And we've recently talked about strategy. However, this is a more focused discussion on strategy. So I've been reading of a book recently called The Disciplines of Market Leaders. And it seems to be a business classic written mid-90s. And it talks about something called value disciplines. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So headline, three value disciplines that customers want to buy. Therefore, knowing that and knowing the value disciplines that you want to play in gives you a competitive advantage, actually, as a business, gets you clear and gets you really focused on how you want to deliver your business. So headline three to discuss today. One is a customer intimacy value, two, a product leadership value, or three, an operational excellence value. Just really helps entrepreneurs focus on their business model and gives them a competitive advantage in delivering for their customers. So I thought we could get into that today.
It sounds brilliant. So are we saying, just to set the scene then, so there's three kind of value-based strategies,
yes,
that a business owner can choose to follow. Are they mutually exclusive? That's my first question. We'll get into each one. But is it the case that you're best served by following one strand? You're nodding. So,
no, I'm nodding because it's a very good question. So the authors advise, they say off the bounce that they argue that no company can succeed today by becoming all things to all people. Therefore, know that there's three values that customers are after. Choose one, do it well. So
okay,
that would be the principle of this conversation. However, I love the word hybrid. So, you know, maybe people listening to this can go, okay, mainly this one, but maybe a bit of that. But certainly what the authors argue is choose one, do it well to succeed in your market.
Okay, and what were the three? There was a customer intimacy was one,
yep,
wasn't it?
So customer intimacy, then we've got product leadership, and then we've got operational excellence. And what I've done is a brief summary of each and then some very famous companies that are in each, and then we could have a conversation.
Sounds brilliant. And then we'll bring it all back together at the end. This sounds...
Yes.
I am pumped for this, Alan. This is going to be mega. Off you go then, sir. Pick your favourite and let's go from there.
Right. Well, let's start with operational excellence. You know, I have got a retail background, as you know. So a headline for an operational excellence value-driven operating model would be it provides customers with reliable products, services at competitive prices. So not really setting the heather on fire there. Products, services at competitive prices, a combination of quality, price and ease of purchase that no one can match in their market. So for me, that's where it ramps up. It's sounding a bit average, actually, until it then says that no one can match in their market. They tend to be built on extremely efficient and effective systems. Yeah. Now, the examples that come to mind here are McDonald's, Asda, and actually IKEA has been thrown in there. So McDonald's, Asda, and IKEA.
Yeah, so they're in the middle of the road. You know, there are better food outlets. I mean, my seven-year-old would dispute this, but there are better food outlets than McDonald's.
Yeah.
However, you do know you know exactly what you're getting every time you're getting it. The price is reasonable. Quality of product is perfectly reasonable for the price. 100% agree with that. Asda. I think pretty much all the supermarkets, bar maybe Waitrose, are in that same thing, right? They're built on consistency across the entire business, right? So it's the same, you know, you go into an Asda, and depending on the size, it might look slightly different inside, but the experience is the same. Does that make sense? And then
yes,
IKEA, 100%, yeah, IKEA is brilliant. Well, if you're just buying your first house, everyone goes to IKEA and kits it out. If you've just moved into a £7 million, you know, super flat in London, you're probably not shopping in IKEA. However, for the people that it serves, it's perfect. Perfect price points, perfect products, perfect kind of ease of... There's no barriers to using IKEA, right? You turn up, it's got its own way of doing it, different to every other shop, but you understand it. Like Argos, do you remember... I always used to think it's about Argos.
Yeah.
Argos was the only shop in the world that had no products that the customers could look at.
That's right.
You used to get the Argos book delivered, didn't you? Do you remember that? There's a new Argos book out. You used to go there.
Yep.
Big book of dreams ready for Christmas as a kid.
That's right.
And then what other shop would you have to go in and flip through a magazine, pick out the numbers, type them into a machine, get a ticket, and someone comes and gives it? You know, that's... But it was unique to Argos, but it worked, didn't it?
I loved it. And you know, I'm getting excited listening to you because actually in our house as well, having the Argos catalogue in November, that was a big deal because you started to go right through and that. But what I love about this description of operational excellence is that, as I say, it starts a bit, for me, it's a bit bland, reliable products and services at competitive prices. But it says this combination of quality, price, ease of purchase that no one can match. That then takes it into a completely different stratosphere, built on effective and efficient systems. Now, what I know about Walmart and Asda, I did a project for Boots actually way back in, when was it, 2013, and actually I got tasked with going to research who the best in class were in this space in retail, and actually the best in class in 2013 were Walmart, and I got access to an iPad that I probably shouldn't have had, that was Walmart's, and it was frightening. This iPad that was in every shop, every Asda shop, to control their stock levels and therefore their on-shelf availability. It was light years ahead of certainly us at that time, but even the likes of Tesco, Sainsbury's. So then they definitely had it. So actually, this is really ringing true. You know, they've got Asda, really low prices, as we know, but they had certainly back in 2013, they had cutting-edge technology that nobody else had that allowed them just to have their shelves filled constantly. And IKEA is interesting for me because my wife and I have only ever had arguments out shopping in one shop, and it's IKEA. And it's uncanny, and I think it is something about the way you go round and round and round. So I would say quality, yes. Price, definitely. Ease of purchase, I hate that in IKEA. That does not work for me. But that's interesting, isn't it?
It's really interesting. I mean, I guess with these examples, all of the examples we've got are for big businesses, but actually, I think... if you can apply them just as easily to smaller businesses, because we've had this conversation a few times. This is easy as an early stage business or a smaller business to assume that all of your competition who are bigger than you or more established than you are better, and what they deliver is better. And actually, a fundamental change in mindset for every business owner is to understand that you do not need to be the absolute best at whatever you do to be good enough for your customers. And actually, there's a lot to be said for turning up when you say you're going to turn up, delivering what you say you're going to deliver, and delivering at the time you said you would deliver it and at the price you said. Now, all of those are the bare minimum of being successful as a business owner. However, the amount of times in my industry, I get it all the time. Why are we talking? Mr. New Client, why are we having this conversation? My current accountant never picks up the phone. It's always late with the VAT return. Doesn't, you know, all of these things. You think, God, that's the bare minimum. It's not, they're not doing all these whiz bang tax planning things. They're just not even answering their phone. And that's the mindset shift. And that plays to this, right? If you can, as a small business, have consistency of products, operational excellence, as we've put it here, you can go a long way, because the majority of your customers are not delivering that. Oh, your competition are not delivering that. Okay, love that. We've got to be quite tight with this timing, otherwise we're going to have a 90-minute podcast. So let's move on. What's next?
Okay, so next one up is product leadership, right? So here we go. The summary is product leadership is about consistently striving to provide your customers with leading edge products or useful new applications of existing products and services. Right, I'll say it again. So it's all about consistently striving to provide your customers with leading edge products or useful new applications of existing products and services. Okay. Actually, I love the way you brought that last one back to small businesses, because that's very much in the mix, and we want these to create the insights for them. So that definitely, let's get that lens on. So four examples of that are Apple.
Can I guess your list?
Yes, there's four on it.
Is one of them Apple?
Apple's one of them. One of them's Apple.
You carry on.
Well done. Because actually, we talked about Steve Jobs last week, didn't we?
So we did, yeah, indeed,
you know,
yeah.
Apple, Nike.
Ooh, interesting. Rolex. Oof. Okay.
And Microsoft.
Yeah. Okay. Rolex is the interesting one there, because I'm not convinced their product has moved on in 100 years. Its product leadership in terms of it is the best of the best in its brand, in its space, but is it cutting edge? I don't know. Interesting. Okay. So what are we saying with this then, Alan? Basically, if you compete in it's any industry, right? Because you productize anything nowadays. We're talking, this is high end, right? Assume that it comes with a high price point. So operating at that cream of the crop. Like, you know, if you have to ask how much it costs, you can't afford it. That's what we're talking, right?
We are. So again, the authors argue choose one, do it well, but they also argue that different customers buy different kinds of value. So we're saying for this conversation, there's three values that customers would buy. And yes, you're absolutely right. What we're saying here is a section of customers in your market that will buy product leadership, and that is the best product or services in the market. And therefore, you're right, that comes with a price point. But what you get is the best quality, is what this is saying.
Okay. I mean, there is the other side of this, the psychology of pricing, that says that if you sell something, you can create the best product in the world. If I created the next iPhone and then gave it a price point of £200, the perceived value of that is not the same as the iPhone that costs £1,000. Irrelevant if it's exactly the same product, because I've priced it myself at £200, my customers are going to see it as a cheap product. Whereas if I came in and said it's super exclusive, it's £4,000 a phone, you know, I will sell, it will be perceived that it is luxury, irrelevant of the actual product. There is a the way your customers view your brand and your price points, you can influence quite significantly, is what I'm trying to say, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. And for me, that Psychology of Pricing podcast, certainly we got a load of feedback, didn't we, on that one? And this is always coming back to entrepreneurs. A lot of entrepreneurs struggle with price point. You know, for me, this is really good news. This is saying, look, guys, there's three values, and one third of customers that are buying values, which they all are wanting the best. So that is giving you, that's allowing you to have a business model and a business strategy that's about creating the best and then confidently be able to go for premium pricing to reflect that it's the best. So you can, it's saying you can choose three values here: operational excellence, product leadership, and customer intimacy. But there is one called product leadership. And if you can create the top of class product or service, because there's a lot of service industries listening here as well, or service, you can command a premium price point, and customers that are looking for that will buy.
And not only will they buy, they will show it off. If you've got a Rolex, right, the best marketing Rolex can do is have it on, you know, David Beckham, right? If he buys a Rolex and he spends 30 grand on it, how many more people are going to buy it because he's showing it off? And it creates its own buzz, doesn't it? And
I was just going to say, I saw a Rolex this morning, you know, not
in
mine.
Person, at the expo.
At the expo. And you know, it was one of these ones. See, when you see a Lamborghini or a Ferrari drive by, you sort of stop and look, don't you? Because they don't see them every day. Maybe you do an Oxford map, but certainly not every day. And when you see one, you go, good grief, it's got quality all over it. It's just got quality. I saw a Rolex today, and the guy, he wasn't showing off, but he was taking it off his wrist. He was getting ready for a presentation. Genuinely, he wasn't bragging. He really wasn't. But it was like a Ferrari moment. It just looked incredible. It looked like this was a very, very well engineered timepiece, and it was attractive, you know. So it's interesting, isn't it?
Okay, so what were the four companies we said? Apple. So people, Apple have got that kind of brand that people are. If you've got an iPhone, you show people you've got an iPhone.
Yeah.
Rolex. Yeah. 100% agree. What Microsoft was one. I'm not sure that lead. Yeah, Microsoft is.
I know. I'm with you. Yeah,
it's product leadership because, you know, give back to Excel. Nothing's ever going to surpass Excel now for what that does. But it's not, no one's, hey, are you only on Google Sheets where we use Excel? Like, no, that's not a thing. Like, what was the fourth one that you said?
So the fourth one's interesting. So we could have a quick debate about this, Nike.
Ah, yes. Well, I said this a few times. I've read the book, Shoe Dog, the book of the guy who created Nike.
Right.
And the first trainers that Nike sold were not Nike trainers. They were Onomitsu Tiger trainers from Japan that they brought over to the States. Didn't think that the Japanese brand, this is kind of, you know, early 60s, so they didn't think the Japanese brand would hold up in the States. So they rebranded it, and they changed the sole, and they did some things, but they then went out to athletes and built that business off the back of every college athlete that was winning track and field. They put Nike trainers on, and they ended up, you know, it's a really interesting story because they ended up in a lot of lawsuits from Onomitsu Tiger, who weren't quite happy with what they were doing. However, their product leadership is probably true, but it's not their, it started off with not being their products, and I think that's really interesting. So there you go. But if you look at it now, we just bought my daughter some Nike Air Max. Right, how long have Nike Air trainers been around?
Forever.
And lots of other brands have tried to create their version of Nike Air. None of them have lasted. There's a reason why. It is, if you want that mix of functional, fashionable trainers, that's where you go.
I think that's a massive point. My son's 14, right? And honestly, fashion conscious off the scale. He wouldn't even look at me if he saw his 14-year-old dad. He would be appalled at that at that human being, right? So he is very, very fashion conscious. And yeah, Nike Air.
Air Force Ones, right? That's what he's in.
That's the fact that we'd even consider it, even look at them as an option, shows you that they've nailed it. And you're right, that's consistent. That's over decades.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting point, actually.
So no, I think they are there. I think they've got, there's other ethical issues of how they get their product excellence and leadership. Yeah. But, okay, so...
And now, do you know, just a question to you. Do you think what's helped Nike in this product leadership space is their branding in terms of that slogan, just do it? Do you think that's helped them?
Possibly. I mean, I think... because I've read that book, I know how that slogan came about. And once you know how that slogan came about and the name, it kind of takes a little bit of the edge off it. I'll be honest.
Okay.
Just because it was kind of bunged together, basically. But I think what Nike have done very well is matching their brand to other people's brands, mainly like sports personalities, and getting that product placement right. And yeah, that thing they followed in the 60s and 70s of getting every track and field star to be wearing Nike trainers. They had a mission to have every gold medalist at one of the Olympics to be wearing Nike shoes. That was their kind of mission statement. I think that's what they've done fantastically well, is made their brand a kind of a fashionable, functional brand, not just a fashion brand and not just a sports brand. They've bridged that gap really well. So, right, we're going to have to move on, I'm afraid, otherwise we are going to run out of time. So, last one.
That's just as well, there's only one more to go, isn't there? So, on the third one then is a value-driven operating model called customer intimacy.
I love this one. This feels like my business, I'm hoping, when you tell me the description.
I think it does. It does. You know, I love this one as well. So it's a company that creates customer intimacy by building unique bonds with their customers. Good neighbors, like close friends. Relationships are important. In fact, that's how it grows, through brand loyalty. So this strategy, it's all about building big relationships with your customers that last. And they tend to get in to be able to do bespoke solutions rather than mass solutions, you know. So that they're very interested in what each of their customer truly wants to provide it.
So they are treating each individual customer as an individual, not as an iPhone purchaser who, you know, whoever can pay the money can buy the iPhone. In this, we're a bit exclusive, but mainly we're all about making sure every customer feels like they're our only customer.
Okay,
now hit me with the brands.
So this is fascinating, because I think one is an obvious one if you live in the UK. And actually, one of them I would have had in the other, another value, but now I see it. So the two of them are John Lewis,
okay,
and Amazon.
Wow.
Exactly. Okay. Wow. What do you think of that then, Matt?
John Lewis, I understand. Mm-hmm. If you've ever wanted a child car seat or a pushchair and gone through... There used to be two brands you'd go to, Mothercare and John Lewis. And if you've ever experienced being sold to in Mothercare compared with having the sales experience in John Lewis, 100% get that. Mothercare sell product, John Lewis sells dreams, right, in that way. 100% get that. I'm not sure I have ever felt Amazon have put their arm around me and been bespoke to me in any way, shape or form. I think they'd be operational excellency if that was me. But anyway, so have you got a reason why Amazon are on that list then?
Yeah, I think I might do, because straight away, absolutely, when I was writing this down, I actually wrote Amazon down and operational excellence. Now, I think when we're talking about, is there a hybrid, then maybe Amazon have got it, because they are clearly built in highly efficient and effective systems. They must be, right?
They must be. Logistics,
right? Uh-huh. But going back to the definition, and bear in mind this is just a summary, so it misses some of the nuances, but it builds bonds with customers like really good neighbours. How many of us are now, the doorbell goes and it's the Amazon guy? How many of us get at least one delivery a day? You were telling me a while back about in the place in Oxford that you live, that bit, John, there's one guy that spends
the housing estate that we're on, yeah, the new housing estate, it's got one courier.
Literally one courier, and it's an entire day to go around this. So for me, and they treat customers like really good neighbours, and very specific wants and solutions. So I'll give you an example. This is a share. I'm going to get a bit vulnerable. I love gardening, right? And in particular, I love challenging myself around growing veg, right? I've got quite into it. I've got two lean-to greenhouses, right? And I wanted them in the sunniest place in the house, in the garden. And Pam, my wife, said they're a monstrosity. They can't go there. So they're in a shady bit in the garden, right? A suboptimal space. And I've done my best. And then I thought the other night, do you know, see if I actually had a mirror in at the back of this. Would that bounce more light and therefore would I get more growth? So I Googled it and the answer to that is yes. But straight away came up foil backing panels that were a thing. And funnily enough, at Amazon. So I went straight to Amazon and there they were. And within, from being an idea, a thought in my head, they were actually delivered 2 days later by the Amazon courier. And in many ways, I think they did provide a very specific solution. It was literally an idea, a thought, and I had it in my house within 2 days. So I actually think it merits being in that, but I wouldn't have put it in that first.
No, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I've got 2 points to make on this that kind of argue either side of the coin, I guess. So firstly, you may have received an email yesterday from Amazon like I did. It's now been all over the news that Amazon are no longer accepting Visa credit cards because Visa's prices are too high for processing Visa credit cards. Amazon don't want to have to raise their prices to their customers. I think that's nonsense. Amazon don't want to lose any of the £3.2 billion of profit that they made. So they're not accepting Visa credit cards. Now, it's a massive shot across the bows to Visa. And I suspect that they will reduce their pricing and it will be, you know, it'll all work out in the wash. But anyway, that would be Amazon telling you they're championing their customers. So that's point one. Point two, they're trying to be a good neighbour whilst also not paying their fair share of taxes and doing it. So it's like your neighbour sitting there and, I don't know, having a street party and Amazon coming out and eating all the food and maybe, you know, dancing to the music, but not providing anything to that party is my take on it. Now, I use Amazon kind of reluctantly. My wife takes the mickey out of me because I'm a reluctant Amazon customer, but it frustrates me that they've got all the money in the world and yet they still take advantage of schemes that the little man can't. And that doesn't feel like they're putting their arm around me. That feels like they're stealing from me, is my, without getting too political on it. So anyway, I'm not sure I got, but John Lewis, 100% agree. And actually, I think a lot of small businesses operate in this way.
I think so.
If you look at, I don't know, independent funeral agent directors, independent estate agents, small professional services firms, all of those guys are operating on, we give you the same product as the big corporates, but we do it in a way, because you're dealing with a business owner, you're part of our family, you are treated like our only customer. And I think that's a massive, massive, easy, unfair advantage to take advantage of if you are a small owner-managed business. That's the easy place to play in.
Oh, I love that. And you're absolutely, I totally agree with that. And I was talking to an owner of a funeral home, a funeral business. And, you know, absolutely customer intimacy is his strategy when you look at these three. And he was telling me about the bereavement counselling services and that welfare that they're offering their customers, you know, are way beyond what the typical funeral business is doing. And for me, it's real customer intimacy and you know, it's useful, it's helpful, but it's also commercially clever in that space. So yeah, now you said at the start, are they mutually exclusive? And I actually, all three of these inspire me, and I'm thinking about my own business. And I'm going, right, okay, how can I take the best of each? And actually looking at this, I probably have elements of operational excellence, if I'm really honest, it's probably the weakest. Product leadership, I'd like to think, yeah, it's right up there, as is customer intimacy. So if I can just continue to look at these three things, now I know that they're a thing, I can strengthen and grow my business. And that's what everyone wants, isn't it?
Absolutely. So let's recap then. The first one we talked about was?
Operational excellence.
So this is consistency of product. It's not necessarily price driven or service driven. It is consistency, same level of service every time. And this is the one that I think a lot of small businesses underestimate, that actually just getting the basics right and doing them at the time you say you're going to do them is enough to be better than a lot of your competition. Okay,
that's a, next one. That's a great point.
Product leadership. Brilliant. We said that completely in sync, which I don't think we've ever managed on the podcast before. We're going to have to edit that out. So, product leadership, Alan, quick summary.
Yeah, so that's about striving to provide your customers with leading edge products or services or useful new applications of existing products or services. So you really want to put on a show, provide the best in market, and you benefit from a premium price.
Brilliant. Okay, and then the final one we've just talked about is customer intimacy. So making every customer of your business feel like they're the only customer, being bespoke to each individual customer, just playing on that customer service focused, neighbourly kind of, yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
And I guess a lot of small businesses can really play on that and win big against corporates, because that is your unfair advantage, right?
Absolutely. You know, we talk about client astonishment and customer astonishment, right? That's definitely customer intimacy in my view. So, yeah, I think small businesses can really show up powerfully in this third strategy for sure.
Brilliant. Well, look, we are bang on time here, but that I really, really enjoyed that. I know we say this every week, but I genuinely, that really helped me think about strategies that my clients follow. And I could quite easily pigeonhole all of my clients into those three bits. We've got one that fits in each, which is really interesting. Okay, well, look, we're going to be back. Have we got anything else to add, Alan? Otherwise, I'm going to wrap it up and let our listeners go back about their day.
Wrap away, Matt.
Brilliant. Well, look, as ever, you can find us all over social media, LinkedIn in particular. If you like what you're hearing, do give us comments and feedback. We love to hear that. Reviews on Apple are really strong at the moment. So if you listen to us via Apple Podcast, do feel free to give us a 5-star review. That would be lovely. Otherwise, we will be back next week with more Podcast Gold. But for now, that's all from me, and that's all from Alan.
Goodbye.
This is the Mind Your Business podcast.